Blog Talk Radio.
What? I turned this off, damn it. Hold on.
I don't know how to play this.
I turned you off. I made a point to turn you off, and you still played. Okay, never mind.
You
Hello,
know,
everyone.
Rachel just said that. If
yes,
you know
Rachel,
where that came from.
Yes, I do. So, anyway,
hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl from the ISF podcast. And today we are we're welcoming Rachel and I. Rachel, my co-host. Say hello, Rach.
Hello, Rachel Elaine. Here as I should be, but fucked off on so much Benadryl right now. This is going to be real fun, guys.
Yes, and I had rice and beans, so who knows what will happen. Anyway, tonight we are very, very happy to welcome back Joel Weinkoop to the show. Hey, Joel. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you all?
Not too bad.
So
can't
happy
complain.
To see you. Talk to you. Nice to see you.
Yes, she. Rachel has a crush on you, Joel. We just want you to know that right now.
Oh,
hey.
Wow. That makes me feel good.
I do. But if it makes your wife feel any better, she's totally included. You guys, you ever make it down to the Central Arkansas area, you got a place to stay. I promise.
Oh, thank you so much.
And, of course, that also goes, if you're ever up in New York City, let me know, and we'll definitely hook up.
You know, it's funny, because I've been to Arkansas when I was a kid. We went into, because everything was the Razorbacks, and there was all stickers, and I got all those Arkansas Razorback stickers. That was when I was a kid, probably like 8, I think, with my parents. And then, of course, we were also in New York when I was a kid, because my dad, his parents are from Troy, New York. He worked on the Delaware and Hudson way back in the 30s and 40s.
So why exactly did you come to Arkansas as a kid? Like, I'm a little interested in that.
Well, I guess my mom and dad, we were just traveling through the country. All our traveling was like when I was a kid. But one of the places we went was Arkansas. And I remember my dad, I thought a Razorback was a monster when I saw it with the big teeth and the big, big body. And my dad was like, no, that's a Razorback. That's their thing here in Arkansas. And
yeah.
So I just remember that from, traveling around the country. And then, of course, being to New York and New Jersey, trying to remember where else. But mom and dad would always take vacations, and we'd, go all the way from Minnesota to New York, and we'd just be stopping at all these states in between, and dad would just veer off and go off, in opposite direction, and we'd see all these different places. But it was all when I was a kid.
Yeah,
that's
same
awesome.
With my dad. My dad and my family, we went on trips all the time during the summer across country from Pennsylvania to California and back. So, I remember that. Seriously. So, anyway, the reason we're here with Joel today is, Joel, you just released the Craiglon Incident. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the film? And what I want to do is get, once you give us the plot and so on and so forth, I want to get into how all this came through the quarantine, how you did all this, because I think this would be really interesting to our listeners.
It's like I said, I'd much rather have had the pandemic not come to our country and everything would have just stayed the way it was. Not that we should call it normal, because it wasn't, but at least we weren't wearing masks. But
right.
The reason I started this was because they were saying on television, it was last year, March, and they were saying on TV, stay home, this thing is in our country now. Don't breathe on anybody. Don't go 6 feet in front of anybody. Don't be coming downtown. Don't drive around. Don't stand out. Don't mingle. Don't do anything. And I was telling my wife, what are they saying? I can't, if I want to drive downtown, I can't. She said, no, you can drive downtown, but they don't want you to go in town, downtown, and then hanging out or going to events and stuff like I because I was, you know, concerned. I was like, are you saying I go get in my car and drive to the storage unit? I'll get pulled over and thrown in jail because I'm driving around town? And she goes, no, you moron, only if you're going and hanging out and with parties and stuff like that. And I go, okay. I said, well, that's still dumb. I said, you know, they're not going to stop me from going outside. I said, come on. I take the camera. I said, come outside with me. I said, here, hold the camera. Shoot me talking to the camera. And then I said, now you stand here and I'll stand here and shoot me talking to the camera again, but this time I'll be talking to myself that's supposedly an alien. And I'm just making crap up as we did it. And then, you know, we got done. We came back in the house. I put it in the editor. I cut it together, and I go, this is really stupid. And then I even asked my wife, I said, hey, I'm going to make a movie out of this. You want to be in it? She goes, no, I don't think so, honey. I love you, but I don't want to be in this thing. And I go, okay. And then I shot a few more scenes just goofing around. And then I called my buddy Phil Herman in New York, and I go, hey, Phil, I'm just being stupid at the camera. You want to shoot some stuff for me? He's like, yeah. And he did, and then it was kind of cool. And then I was cutting the scenes together, and I'm going, hey, this is kind of cool. And then I got Sean C. Phillips in California. And I go, Sean, you want to, you know, I'm just kind of experimenting with this little dumb little movie. And I said, you want to shoot some stuff for it? And he's like, yeah, Joel. And he shot a few things. And then all of a sudden, it's a whole year later, and it's a four-hour movie. It became this big epic thing. And now I've got spaceships and aliens and laser beams and Star Trek-type, you know, 1968 special effects. And I got spaceships crashing and neighborhoods and houses blowing up and spaceships, you know, crashing and aliens killing people and then just comedy between, you know, the main actors where they're just being goofballs, you know, in between each other, you know, having stupid conversations and then it just became this movie, and that became part one of the Craiglon incident, and I'm working on part two, which will be out probably at the end of next month.
So there was no sense of an idea or a script, you just went off and said, oh, we'll shoot this scene and they'll shoot that scene and we'll try to put it together? I mean, sort of like a collage, or how did things...
You know, I should emphasize on that. It was like, I shot my first scenes. Like, I think the first thing I did was with between myself. It was me going like, what are you doing here, you alien imposter? And he's like, oh, I'm here from the planet Zatar, and I'm going to take over your planet. And I was like, you better not. You're a bad alien. And just stupid stuff. And then, I told my wife the next morning, I said, I just want to go out and shoot a beginning to this dumb thing that you don't want to be a part of. And I went outside, and then I had her, I said, just run the camera on me. I'm just going to blab out. So I just started saying, you know, crap. I'm like, oh, the alien came here. I'm pretending like I'm talking to somebody. And then I brought the footage in. Like I said, I looked at it. And then I said, well, let me call Phil. And I called Phil, and I tell him about it. And he goes, okay, yeah. And I go, well, I have to write down what I said because I have to give you a written script for you to say back what I'm talking about. So it was like a script in backwards formation. I was shooting my scenes. But then I had to have the other actors had to follow a script because it had to tie together with what I said. So I would sit down and type up the whole, like if there was a whole scene between me and Phil, I'd type up the entire thing as in a script form. But I already shot my scene, but he had to know what to say back. And then I would send it to him, and I'd say, just shoot your responses and give me little pauses in between, and then send it back to me. And Phil Herman, and I have to say, Sean C. Phillips also, they were so great at, I would send something to Phil and go, hey, I need this back as soon as you can. And the guy would go shoot it right away, and then he would get it back to me. And Sean C. Phillips would do the same thing. I go, Sean, I kind of need this too. Can you get this back to me? And he'd like 20 minutes later, he would send the footage back to me. So I would start cutting it together. And that's about the time my wife came in and said, wow, this is really turning out to be good. Can I be in this? And I go, you told me you didn't want to be in it. She goes, well, I changed my mind. I don't want to be in it. But that's how it is. So it's a written script, but it started out with me just kind of, you know, out the front yard, using the camera, shooting some silly dialogue, and then saying to myself, hey,
we call that free balling.
Yeah, and then coming back in and actually typing it up and then sending it to people and saying, Sean, this is what I need you to say back to my character. Phil, this is what I need you to say back to my character. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
So So they were sending it back to you via the internet or that, and then you would have it, and then you'd be able to edit it from there? How does that work?
Yeah, I would get write it, send it to them, and then I would say, okay, shoot this on whatever, whether you have a camera or phone camera. The phones are supposed to be phones, not video cameras. They're phones, but they have the video technology in them. Or they would have a regular camera, and I'd say, whatever you have, you know, shoot it on your camera, your video phone, whatever, and then send it back to me. We transfer me back the footage. Then I'll take that. I download it into my timeline, and then I just start editing the thing together.
And what kind of editing machine were you using?
Or
program or whatever. Program, you know, how were you editing all this stuff together? Because this is fascinating to me. I mean, to be able to do this. Go ahead.
I'm probably the only guy that does it, but this is what I learned on. This is all I have. I'm not interested because I have so many. I was with a guy last night shooting his things, and he told me, he goes, I got to get together with you and teach you how to work with Premiere. And I go, no. I'm too old to learn anything else. I'm still cutting things together on Movie Maker. And I've had other editors here at my house watch me work on Movie Maker, and they go, you're amazing, man. Nobody has as much patience as you do with Movie Maker. You work miracles with Movie Maker that other people cannot do, and they've moved on to Premiere and all these bigger formats. I can't do those, but I pretty much mastered Movie Maker. I cut a whole movie, and somebody told me, they go, dude, Movie Maker wasn't to make movies. It was made to make, like, 13-minute little birthday videos, not what you're doing. And it's all I know. So, you know, I'm doing the best with what I have.
That's
well,
the best
you know,
birthday
I mean,
video
that's
I've ever seen,
true,
by the way.
Yeah, it's true because I have a hard time learning new shit too. Just, you know, let me do the old way. I'm with you on that, without a doubt. So was all the film and all the stuff they were doing on their phones, was it all compatible?
Yeah,
you know, that's, using
that's the hardest thing. There was a lot of, I got, you know, I keep saying like 50 people. I haven't really read the IMDb, but I think there's about 50 people in the Craiglon incident. And everybody was sending me different things on different formats. So I had Lloyd Kaufman sent me something on one format. Debbie Rashan sent me something on one format. I had people in town. They're shooting on different cameras. They're shooting in landscape mode. They're shooting in, you know, the other mode with the black bars on the side. And I was trying to separate those things so they were together and the landscapes were together. But everybody's phone, everybody's different cameras. So all their technology that's coming in is not the same. So it's not matching. So I'm like either telling them, can you do it in this format or send it back to me or I've got to change it. So I did have a lot of audio problems, which I had to correct the best I could in the movie, but because it's something I can't really control, like in the format of a Movie Maker, it's not like Premiere, and even if it was, you've got like, you know, 50 different formats coming in. It's not like me going out with my camera or hiring a guy and saying, okay, let's go out with the Red Black Magic, and then we're going to go out and shoot a movie, and everything's going to be exactly the same. This is not, because I got too much footage from too many people all over the world, and everybody's shooting on something different. It's not like there's one camera. There's 800 different cameras, and everybody's using one of those 800.
Yeah, how do you make it seamless or that it all flows together with all that different footage? I mean, that must drive you crazy in the editing and audio rooms. Seriously.
The worst was only when I had some audio issues, and it's because the audio would sound fine to me when I was playing it back on, and I had, you know, another guy told me, he goes, well, you got to do it through your headphones. You got to do it through this. You got to do it. Well, I don't know all that. You know, I'm just doing the best with what I got. So when I would play it back on my editor, it's fine. I can hear everything perfect. It sounds great, but then when it goes from there into a file, and then you burn your first DVD and you watch it. Well, I was trying to get it done for Tampa Bay Scream, so it was like, I don't know, I had maybe a week, and I was getting with my duplicator in Minnesota, and I was like, if I get this to you, can you get it back to me? And he's like, I can get it back to you like the night before. And I go, okay. So I hurried up, finished the disc, and shot it off to him. He made it. I got it. And then I kind of saw some of the issues. But the thing with the issue is because, you know, I'd hear people, you know, the audio was kind of here and there, because then I did some ADR, because my stuff would be higher than the other guy's stuff that shot with the camera phone. And his camera phone wasn't compatible with my high-definition camera. So I would bump his audio, and then his audio was higher than my audio. So then I'd bump my audio, and it was higher than his. So then finally I had to ADR the whole scene. But for the most part, everybody matched. And what I did twice, because, you know, I heard it from more than a couple people, and it was kind of annoying to me, but I took my TV, and I put my, and all TVs are different, but I took my TV and I put it at 40. Now, I listen to my TV usually at 30, because we're watching something on TV, and I'm always telling my wife, can you please turn that up for me? So it's usually at 30 to hear the news or a movie or a TV show. I want it, you know, I want it at 30.
That's like a motherfucker. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, I said subtitles like a motherfucker. That actually helped both of my children learn how to read, is because I'm so hard of hearing for the most part that I have to keep subtitles on everything. So there you go.
Well, then, so what I do with this, because I always say, is it me or is it kind of low? And my wife's always like, no, it's kind of low. She goes, you like it a little louder, but I don't think it's anything, you know, you're deaf or something. So I'm like, okay, but for the movie, for the most part, you can leave it. But I set the TV at 40, and I watched it twice in my house, and, you know, quietly, not like kids running around and dogs barking and, you know, atomic bombs going off out front. I watched the movie at 40, and I could hear it fine. So I didn't really have a problem with it. And but I think it goes beyond that, because a lot of people are saying, oh, that's part of the charm. It's a B-movie, and that's what, you know, it's supposed to have a little, you know, you got an audio crackle from, you know, from the audio or the continuity. And the continuity, the continuity doesn't even come into it, because I took the whole Ed Wood approach, because there's even, you can make a game out of this movie, because if you watch it, there are so many Easter eggs to other movies and television shows. If you just sat there and watched it for that reason, you'd have a ball with it, because you'd be like, oh, that's from Dirty Dancing. That's from Supernatural. That's from Star Trek Insurrection. That's from Flying Man from Outer Space. There's a ton of these things through the whole 2 hours from beginning to the end. And then you just add the story on top of it, which is a fun little story. And then you got the silly Monty Python type humor that's in it, which is fun. So, I don't know, to me, it makes her, you know, a fun little movie. And so far, everybody I've heard back from, you know, really enjoyed it.
Okay, so I guess the next thing is, you get a shot. How did you raise the money? I'm taking a look at the producers and the executive producers, and, like, you have a ton of them. Was it just that people were doing this for, you know, just for a lark and would shoot and then just give you and that, and you were able to keep the budget down that way, or how did you basically raise the money for it?
Well, first of all, I'm doing just what everybody else does, except I tend to think that's begging, but, my wife said one time, a long time ago, when we got married, you tell people, you say, well, you give them the blah blah thing, so they know what to buy you for your wedding. And I go, you mean like begging? And she goes, no, it's not begging. It's this list thing that you put out there, so people know if you want a toaster or an espresso maker or stuff like that. And I go, so it's begging? And she goes, no, it's not begging. It's just letting them know what you want. So, then, you know, years later, here comes along this thing called, it wasn't Indiegogo, I'm trying to think of the one that was first, where you...
Kickstarter?
It's like an Indiegogo. What's that?
Kickstarter, maybe?
Yeah, it was Kickstarter, I think it was the first one, and I go, okay, Kickstarter, that's like that wedding thing, that's begging, and people are like, no, you're asking people to give you money, and I'm going, like begging, and they're like, no, it's not begging, you ask them to give you some money, and then you give them a drawing or a part of the movie. And I'm like, for $400? You get a drawing? Well, no, it's like $10 for this, $20 for this, $30 for this, $40 for this, $50 for this, $80 for this, $1,000 for this, $10,000 for this. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I thought about it at one time. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to get in there and do that. And then Tim Ritter and Scott Tepperman were doing one for Truth of Air 5. And Scott and Tim both asked me, they said, can you be like, kind of like a spokes, not a spokesperson, but can you do some videos for people to let them know we're doing this Truth or Not, their fundraising, part five. So I said, yeah. So I started doing the videos and saying, you know, oh, thank you to Josh Brolin, gave us, you know, $100 for Truth or Not 5. Here's two kicks from Wine Coop, and Dan Hess will be back. And, you know, I did all this. And they raised, I think Scott and Tim, they raised a bunch of money for Truth or Not 5. But I'm still like, begging. You're still like going, hey, give me your money. Give me money. And, yeah, you're getting something out of it. But I don't know. To me, I'm still like, you're begging for money. But then when Craiglon came up, I said, I got to do something to raise money, and I don't want to do a begging list where I'm going, hey, just give me $20, and I'll send you some scraps from my notebooks. What I did was the same thing I'm doing anyway. I just said, buy one of my movies that I'm in for $20, and you get a producer credit. I said, buy three of my movies, and you're already getting the movie. So that's the deal. The deal is over with there. You're getting the three movies for $60. We're done with the deal. All I'm doing is saying, now, because you bought those three, I'm going to give you an executive producer credit in my movie, The Craiglon Incident. And then I said, now I'm adding this. If you get nine movies, you get an executive producer credit, and you get a title card at the beginning of the movie. And that's pretty much what did it for this movie. This money that's coming in is going to my special effects. This is where I could pay my actors. I was able to pay my duplicator. I'm able to pay just anything I need, I've got, because I've got my own money, of course. But then I also have, you know, these producers. I have executive producers, and I have the people that are buying the title card. So they'll buy nine movies. So, you know, right there, that's $180, and then they get a title card, and they get their executive producer credit. So they're getting what they want, and even just take the whole movie part of it away. If they said, hey, I want to get three movies, and there was no, I wasn't making any movie, and they go, oh, I want to get three sure they didn't get the games from you. I go, okay, that's $60. Okay, here's $60, here's your movie. Now you're getting this on top of it. So now you get your name in the movie, and then to top things off, I put your name at the beginning of the movie, and I put your name at the end of the movie, and you get that title card if you know, bought the nine movies and get everything. And I have, like you said, I think there's nine, I don't have a movie in front of me, but I think there's nine producers or that get title cards. I think there's six or seven that get title cards on the back of the box. And then, of course, in the opening credits, it tells you producer, and then it says executive producer. Because you don't have credits like that at the beginning of movies. I did it because I wanted people to see their name, because I know that's what they want. And then at the end of the movie, where your credits are, I put them again. And then I gave them credit on the box art. Generally, you don't get all that stuff, you know, from a movie. A movie is generally, you're going to have your opening credits, the movie plays, and then you have your end credits. Now, I wanted to do something special for everybody, so I put their credits at the beginning, and I put them at the end. And then these ones that, you know, did more for the movie, they got on the cover of the box or the back of the box.
I think that's genius. I think that's friggin' genius. Because everybody wants to have their name, you know, an IMDb credit or something like that, or even just to be on the box. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Well, and the same thing with me. And I'm like, you know, a lot of times I see people making movies. They go, you know, drive to Orlando, spend 4 days here, all 25 of us will sleep on top of each other, and I got a box of mini wheats that we can all share. Work for free, but I'll give you an IMDb credit. And I'm like, that's not good enough. And so, but when I'm doing this to those people, I mean, IMDb kind of goes with you making a movie. That shouldn't be like, hey, I'll give you an IMDb credit. Really? Because I made a movie, I should get an IMDb credit. You shouldn't have to wave that in front of my face like a parent. But for
oh my
people
God,
that
exactly.
were doing this, they would say that to me. They'd go, well, do I get an IMDb credit? And I go, dude, you're in the movie. Of course you get it. Why are you asking me if you get an IMDb credit? You should get an IMDb credit if you do a movie. There should be no, do I get one? Yes, you get one. So
Thank you. Thank you. I have a friend who has acted in a lot of movies, like in the local area, and by local, I mean like Memphis, which is just a few hours away from us, and he just posted his IMDb page today, even though this guy has played small and or middle to larger roles in a lot of movies. Apparently, it takes a little bit to actually get an IMDb cred, and so if there's not somebody like advocating for you, or you don't have so many movies under your belt, you're not going to get it. And I really appreciate that you were saying, yeah, you need an IMDb cred because you were here for this. Like, that's what it's for.
Well, no, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And what people don't know is, like, and sometimes, and it's very easy, to you can make your own page, and I think people don't understand that. And the sad thing is, like, let's just say there's producer A through E, and you came on and you worked for producer A, and then you worked for producer B, and you worked for producer C, D, E, and F. So you work for producers A through F. They're all different. And then producer A puts up your IMDb page, Johnny Biggle, and he gets an IMDb page. And now producer B comes along and goes, oh, let me make Johnny Biggles a page. Oh, he's already got one. I'll make him John B. Biggles 2. And pretty soon you got your actor, Johnny Biggles, who's got nine IMDb pages with two movies on this, three on this one, seven on that one, two on that, and four on that. When they should all be one big page. So I always say about when actors, because I see it a lot, I tell the actor when they're doing the movie, I go, look, man, when you're doing your movie with somebody and they go, they're building your IMDb page, tell them that you already have one and to use the page you have. Otherwise, you're going to end up with nine IMDb pages, and you're going to, someday, someone's going to look at your IMDb page and see how much you've done, and guess the one they're going to look at. They're going to want that look like that says you played Johnny Underpants in one movie. But they don't know you got, you know, 52 other credits on 19 other IMDb pages. So make sure you get it under one page. I've fixed a lot of people have come to me and they go, hey, man, Joel, can you fix my IMDb page? I got four IMDb pages. Can you merge them? And I learned how to do this. It's not really a super big deal. You just got to sit there and read what they tell you to do. And I fixed their pages for them because you should only have that one. But definitely in the movie, when you're doing something and your friend gets done, let's say Jack gets done, he goes, yeah, I just made this movie, The Ant Crawlers. I looked it up on IMDb and it says Ant Crawlers and everybody's on there but me. Oh, I'm so upset. Well, first of all, you can add yourself. Jack can just go on there and say add to page and puts his name in there. But a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to do it. Let the producer do that. Well, then you got to call the producer, and then you got to trust him to do it the right way and not start you another page somewhere else. Because if you put your name in the movie page, the IMDb page for The Giant Monster Killers, and you say you got to build yourself a page, if the producer don't get it, for Jack, and tell your credit, and then you got to put on that credit, Jack the Giant Monster Killer, and then it'll link to that IMDb page, but somewhere it's got to start. Either you got to start it or the producer. So some actors don't get on IMDb pages because the producers don't bother to, the producer's like, I don't have time to add these guys on my IMDb page. And they're like, I don't care, they let the actors do it. And then the actors are like, well, I don't know how to do it. Why isn't the producer doing it? So you kind of got to start taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's something I didn't actually realize. And, that's good information for our listeners. I'm learning stuff, Joel. You're teaching me. You're so good.
Well, I've been doing it a long time, so I always I give Tim Ritter credit for pretty much everything I've ever learned. I went to Tim's apartment way back after we did Killing Spree, because I was doing Lost Faith, and he goes, well, first thing, he goes, I'm going to show you a production board, and he brought it out, and I go, Tim, I don't even want to look at that. I'll throw up. I go, that's the most nauseating. We had them in Truth or Dare where they slide the little tiles out of each thing and slide them to Oz. I was like, I don't even want to see that again. He goes, well, what I can do is do it on index cards. So he taught me how to do a production board with index cards where you put down, you know, day one, day two, day three, day four. You have all these index cards or 7 days, whatever you have. And then your first day, you put down the cards, what you want to do on under day one, and then what you want to do under day two. And then you line them all up. And then as you're making your movie, then all of a sudden someone's calling you on the phone. And they're going, hey, I can't make it Wednesday, but I can make it Friday. And you're like, oh, damn, I got to take Wednesdays and move it to Fridays, Fridays to Wednesdays. And then you shift these cards around until you get everybody happy with, you know, what you're going to do. And on the cards, it tells you where your shoot's going to be, when the food's coming, what costumes you need, who's going to be there. And that's basically the production board. And then you spread that out when you go to shoot so you know what you're going to do for that day. And then, of course, your shot list and all the other crap. But those are all things that I learned from Tim. And then, of course, the distributing nightmare was because Tim and I did it together with Truth or Dare, because I was when there was a big lawsuit between Tim and Peerless Films. But Tim and I were still buddies through it, but then I was felt weird because I was in the middle because Jeff for Peerless Films had me selling Truth or Dare. And I'm out with Tim selling Truth or Dare, and one guy even asked me, he's, wait a minute, you're suing the company and you're performing. I go, yeah, don't try and figure it out, man. We're still friends, and that's what counts. So, you know, we learned all that, and then through Killing Spree, and then, of course, my movie, Lost Faith, which I self-distributed myself, but we found all the ins and outs and pitfalls, and then all the money that got stolen from us on Creep, and then we hired lawyers, and then we tried to go sue the guys that were ripping us off, and they would close their shops, and they'd open up somewhere else, and Tim would track them down, and Tim would tell me, because he had a call to me, he's changed his voice, but I know it's him, and we lost a whole bunch of money that way. So I learned all this stuff, me and Tim learned all this stuff together, and so just the IMDb thing, and how to sell the movie, and the distributor, and you know, how to sell it, and how to market it, we learned all that together, and that's kind of why, you know, there's a lot more I could learn, but I really don't care, because it's a lot of the, well, it's a lot of the big-time stuff for the a big, and I'm not talking about distributors, like, I'm not talking about Brain Damage or SRS or Wild Eye. They're all cool in their own way, but they're not some big Hollywood conglomerate, which will, I know guys that I'll go, so what are you doing with your movie making? This is about 10 years ago. Well, our script's with in Los Angeles with our screenwriter. And I go, oh, okay, and then I'll see them again in 6 months. So I go, hey, what's going on with your movie? Well, it's going back and forth between the screenwriter and us and our lawyers, and we're talking, and we're trying to get this person and that person. I'm thinking, how are you going to get Michael Madsen to be in your little 80-grand movie or whatever? But I'm thinking, okay, and then I'll see him again in 6 months. I go, hey, man, you must have that movie done by now, right? No, still with our agent in L.A., and he's arguing with so-and-so, and they've got things, emails coming back to us, and we're saying we need this. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then 6 months later, I see him again, and I'm like, cool, man, that movie must be done. Where is it at? No, we're still arguing. And to this day, I don't think they're done. And 10 years have gone by, and you don't have anything. And I've made 30 movies. I would rather put out my crap and wait around 50 years to get something done in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing about being an independent, right? I mean, you do it yourself. And that's the great thing about this aesthetic, this micro-budget aesthetic, because you don't wait around. You just do it, get it done, and find a distributor. Now, let's talk a little bit about this distribution, okay? Because now you've got it done, and now you can sell it, and please push it, you know, promote it right now. But how did you find, are you self-distributing, or how are you doing that?
Well, I just, and like I said, like what Tim and I have learned all this time, it's kind of like you don't want to self-distribute it because it's a lot of hard work. You'd rather just say, okay, here's the movie, it's done, let me just give it to Wild Eye or give it to SRS Studios, and they'll make the master, and they'll burn the DVDs, and they'll shrink wrap it, and they'll do all their advertising, and then they'll do all that, and your movie comes out, and they're like, oh, where's my check? Ooh, I got $1.50. All right, yay, I'm happy. You know, because they're putting up all the money. I totally understand that. So in my event, and nobody, and really, honestly, it's my kind of thing. It's my kind of movie. It's the way I like to work. I like to, you know, work quickly. I like to get it out. When other people are telling me, hey, fix that. No, I don't want to take 2 years to fix a bunch of shit. I just want my movie out right now. I don't care. If you like it, great. If you don't, I don't care. So in my way, I just said, and maybe it's because I have a lot of producers, executive producers, title card owners. I have a lot of people in it. But I'm getting orders from people I don't even know. They know me on Facebook. They go, hey, man, I heard about this movie, The Craiglon Incident. Or they'll send me a friend request. And I'll say, and the first thing I ask for a friend request, I go, hi, I got your friend request. Thank you so much. How do you know me? Not trying to say what, I just want to know if this is somebody that knows me.
I can personally verify that this is exactly how Joel D. Winecoop responds to friend requests. Just saying. Personal verification legit just happened to me.
Because more than a lot of them, I'll say, hey, I got your friend request. How did you hear of me? And they'll go, oh, I want to know if you want to donate $28,000 to the Indian Republic because I want you to fix my car tires or something. You know, and I'm like, this has nothing to do with movies. This doesn't interest me. Or they're, can you send me nude photos? No. Or some girl, I'll show you my breasts if you pay me. And I'm like, no, I'm not interested in that. I want people that watch my movie. So,
I just want everybody to feel safe and sound in knowing that none of those scenarios ever happened when Joel and I became Facebook friends.
no, that's absolutely
I did not
right.
offer
yes,
boobs
no.
or dick pics. I'm just, there you go. I'm sorry if you wanted them, Joel. Not going to happen.
Everybody gets the bullshit on Facebook. You know, that you answer requests, yeah, you can be my friend, and the next thing you know, your Facebook is filled up with, buy my Yugoslavian purses. They're made from camel eyeballs and stuff I don't want on my page. So if
exactly.
If you're interested in movies, that's when I want to talk to you. So a lot of people, because I really hype up the movie, I really am pushing this movie probably more than any of my other movies, and I sold like 150 copies on the first weekend. And a lot of it, like I said, is because, you know, the people that are producers, executive producers, of course, the actors in the movie are getting them. One of my actors, he ordered 60 copies from me and 200 posters because he does a lot of these. He goes to shows and stuff like that, so he wants them for the comic book shows. So I have
really
that.
Quick, Joel.
But, what's the answer?
Do you know if it's available on any sort of platform for anybody to watch, or is it still just straight to DVD right now?
No, I've already been approached by that, and they're offering me nothing. They just want to take the movie and put it out there, and I'm like, no, that's defeating the purpose of me trying to make something off this movie. So that's why one thing about distributing it yourself, you can control. But now, you're never going to stop somebody from, if somebody, you're at a show and you sell your movie, they take it home, they burn it, they make their own copies of it, they make their own cover, and then they start selling it, which is, you know, black market and you know, just the
it's
whole
awful.
Illegal government. But unless you sell something, you'll never get it out there if you don't take that chance. Most people are just going to take the movie and they're going to take it home, put it on the shelf, and they're going to watch it. So what I've done is just distributing it myself, although Robert Wildeye, he goes, send it to me. He goes, maybe we'll pick it up. But I've already done all the work. I already paid for someone to do the poster. I paid for my duplication. I paid for the disc. I'm doing all the stuff the distributor will do. But what I do is just say, you know, you want a copy, I put it on eBay. I've got a lot of responses off my eBay from overseas because they're seeing it on my Facebook site. And then I've got people that are friends of mine on Facebook, and they'll be like, hey, I'm going to share this. And then they share it to their pages, and those people share it to their pages. And then that's when I start hearing from people on Facebook I don't know, and they send me a friend request, and I go, hey, cool, I got your friend request. How did you hear of me? I heard of your movie, The Craiglon Incident. I want to buy a copy. Is that cool? And I'm like, yes. And I've got at least 10 to 20 now that are I don't know these people. It's cool that they're reaching out to me, and I have no way to know them unless they, you know, get in touch with me. And then this is how I can move. Yes, it's in a small way. Somebody that's a distributor is going to go, well, I'll market the thing over to Australia, and I'll have it in Arizona and Japan. I'll take on the whole. Yeah, you'll take on the whole thing, but you're going to take probably most of my profits with it. I would rather just stay small and do the best I can. And I'm way out of the red. What I owed my duplicator and my poster and my special effects guy, everybody's paid, and I'm way ahead of the deal. So I'm, yeah, I'd want more, but I'm doing fine doing it as a little guy.
No, and that's what I was wondering about, is because genuinely, I'm really interested, because you do have some of your movies on platforms, and I will say that it's not usually free to watch your movies, and I really appreciate that, because I understand how the little guy's got to make his money, and I'm not saying you're the little guy, but you know what I'm saying, versus, you know, big Hollywood budget. I totally get that. So that's what I was saying, is I'm not asking where we can watch your shit for free. I'm asking if you have it available, like, you know, Amazon, a lot of times there's the option. If it's a Prime thing, you get to watch it for free, but you can also pay for stuff. And I didn't know if that was – I don't know how all that works. I don't know, you know, the percentages and what you have to do to make an Amazon account. So I am really happy for you that you have found a way to keep – in the you know, I guess, black, green, red, keep above the water with your filmmaking, because I really, really love what you have done so far, because it is just so out there, and a lot of people call you the king of B-horror, and I say that you are the master of micro-budget.
I've heard that a lot. But that's only because I'll take where the other guy will say, no, I got to have it just perfect. I mean, audio, and I have to have this guy flown in, and the lighting's got to be – I just don't care that much. I'm like, what? I've been on bigger sets where they got the red and the magic, the big, huge cameras. And the guys are arguing, and I'm going, oh, my God, just shoot the fucking scene. What are we waiting on? What's the shadow? Shoot the shot. I just want to move on and make the movie. We're going to spend 9 hours here talking about the fucking shadow. Roddenberry had the same thing on Star Trek. He said, the guys were arguing. Well, gee, there's a shadow. He goes, fuck the shadow. Shoot the shot. I got William Shatner here and Leonard Nimoy talking. Shoot them. I don't care about the shadow.
Oh, my God. Carl Shatner.
Shatner. Yes, we have about Shatner.
Carl, I'm calling a Shatner right now.
I just did a Shatner.
Where's Shatner on Impulse, and I was on his movie Thumbs, and he got to, towards the end of the day, he just started calling me Bill Shatner. He goes, Shatner, has anybody seen Shatner? Go get Shatner. Tell Shatner we need to. Bill, you think you're insulting me, but I'm a big William Shatner fan, so I'm not insulted. You tell me Shatner all day long. I should be so lucky to have all his money and all his Star Trek franchise.
Yep. Absolutely. So I have one other question about the production of the film, and that's the special effects. Who worked on the special effects? And of course, you're doing this inexpensively. So how did you do the spaceships and all that?
Well, the first one I have is a friend of mine here in town. His name is Steve Deaton, and he did some of my special effects. Like in the first movie, there's a thing that there's like 23 people on a Zoom call, and I have to have everybody in the Zoom call at once to show all 23 characters, but then I have them all singly, and they all have little things like their names, like Agent Shadow is my wife Kathy. She's got her subtitle Agent Shadow, and then she's clicking buttons, and I had to put all that in. But the other guy is doing all my green screen and all my effects that are in the background, and he did those here in town, and he did one of my other ones where the two of the superheroes are attacked by the alien, and they fire their powers at the alien, but he puts up a force field and blasts them with his laser gun. And then, but the guy here in town, you know, he's caught up doing his own thing. He's got a radio show also, and he wasn't able to, you know, work on them as much. So then I hooked up with David Black, who's doing a movie in Australia, and his movie is called, and I got to make sure I say this right, Toxic Alien Babes from Outer Space. So I heard about his movie, and then I started talking to him, and then before you know it, I'm talking to his special effects guy. Or then David first said, Joel, how'd you like to shoot something for Alien Toxic Babes from Outer Space? And I go, David, I'll do you one better than that. How would you like it if I could cross, I'll shoot my scene and we'll cross it over with your scene? Or he said, we'll cross it over with our scene. So my scene from the Craigline incident is in Alien Toxic Base from Outer Space. And my scene from Alien Toxic Base from Outer Space is in the Craigline incident. So the two movies, they crisscrossed. And then I got to meet Gerardo, and I'm saying the name wrong, so I apologize to him, Shirachi, Shara, and he's in Australia also working on Alien Toxic Base from Outer Space. And then I got a hold of him, and we made a deal. I said, can I help, you know, I'll pay you, can you do my special effects? So he's doing all my special effects, the bigger ones, like, now I've got spaceships, and they crashed down, and I went to a neighborhood that we're eventually going to be moving to. And I just went out and shot all these scenes out, and the people thought I was crazy because I'm running around with a laser gun. They're going, what are you doing? And they go, why are you dressed up like an alien? I come back the next day to shoot the other scenes. And I go, well, you kind of got to imagine it, but I'm going to blow your house up, and a spaceship's going to drop on that house, and I'm going to blow your house up. And they're like, well, you're going to blow it with dynamite? And I go, no, it's all special effects. And so I did that. It's all going to be in part two. Part two is like a big special effects bonanza, but on the very low. But it's on the micro scale of, if I watch the movie, it would have nothing to do with me being in it. If just my friends were in it and they showed me this movie and they go, look at this movie, it's got spaceships, and I put it on, I would love it. Kevin Lindemuth did a lot with Alien Agenda, and one of his, I was in a lot of Kevin's stuff, but in his first one, Alien Agenda, I wasn't in that. And I watched that, and where he was going, oh, the spaceships look whatever. To me, I'm like, oh, that looks so cool, because I'm from that Ray Harryhausen era, and Irwin Allen, and, you know, Lost in Space, and Star Trek, and that's my era. I mean, yeah, I like Independence Day and stuff, but my era was way back, you know, in 68, 69, with all those, I love that stuff, Lost, and stuff that you look at now and go, oh, that's so hokey. But that was my childhood, and I still love that. So I've got those effects in my movie now. They're just, 72 years late? That's okay.
Well, you know, one of the things about your films that I love is that there is this love of old school. I mean, you and I are basically the same age. Because I grew up in the 60s watching Lost in Space and yep. all that, you know. And there's this, I won't say it's just nostalgia, but you also do it with a sense of humor and it's fun. You know, I mean, that's
a sense
the one
of
thing
understanding
that I have
of how campy shit was back in the day.
Without a doubt. You know, it's
and that is it. You are not the king of B movies. You are the master of micro budget, because you understand what B movies are and what they mean to people, and you really take that tongue in cheek, foot in ass humor and incorporated into a very sometimes serious story, and it's fucking amazing. It's hilarious, and also there's usually a lot of gore, and that just makes it even better.
Well, there's something.
Go ahead, Joel.
No, I was just gonna say there's some movies I want to do where I'm trying my best to make it serious, and it'll still look hokey, like. Like even our Truth and Air movies. Tim told me once, I go, oh, God, that guy called the Truth and Air movies cheesy. And Tim goes, well, I agree, they are cheesy. And I go, they are? And he goes, yeah, man, all our movies are cheesy. And I go, oh, okay. And once I learned to know that Tim was calling our movies cheesy, then I said, well, then I guess I'll learn to call our movies cheesy too. But I will try. There's some movies I'll do, and I do my best to make them as clear and as the storyline's going and everything like that. I want to make it as clear and cool, and maybe I'm trying to send, like, message. I send a message in Lost Space, and I try and make all the cuts with the karate, and I'm trying to make the fights all as realistic as I can. But with the Craigline incident, that doesn't matter to me. I was looking more for the humor. And like, for instance, there's a scene with Lloyd Kaufman, and Lloyd Kaufman is talking to my news reporter, who's William D. Horton. And he's awesome in the movie. He plays a lot of scenes with my wife, Kathy. And Kathy does, like, six or seven roles herself, because we're on duplicate Earths. So I can use the same actors over again because they're on. The whole movie is about the multiverse.
It's a multiverse.
And there's 197 Earths or thousands of Earths. So if I use Kathy on Earth A, I can use Kathy on Earth D and Kathy on Earth E, and then name them different, and all the characters can be named different. And I mean, amongst us, you know, duplicating parts, I got a bunch of actors doing their own roles. But like William is talking to Lloyd Kaufman, and Lloyd Kaufman is saying, "I was in my backyard last night, and I was just playing my clarinet, and all of a sudden a spaceship came out of the sky and killed everybody." And my news reporter,
"I was washing a dish, and
the
reporter
goes, 'Wow, that's amazing! I didn't know you could play the clarinet.'"
Right.
He's amazed by him playing the clarinet. So that's the kind of humor. It's Monty Python. I mean, it's Monty Python, although Monty Python's Life of Brian. Brian runs into this tower, and he starts running up the tower, and the Romans are chasing him, and he's running up the tower, and he gets to the top of the tower, and it's like a 1,000-foot drop, and the Romans are coming, and he jumps off, and a spaceship flies down from outer space, and Brian comes through the window, and it flies up into outer space, and Brian's behind the aliens, and they're going, "Oh, they're beside the Earth!" And they're firing lasers at another planet, and then all of a sudden it rolls over, and Brian falls out of the spaceship, and he falls back down on the ground, and the Romans all come down and catch him. It's just out of nowhere, and that's what I like to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I do have to mention about Lloyd Kaufman is I love his character name. Harry Scrotum.
He actually, he had a different name.
Is he any relation to the Mike Roach?
Something like Mike that, Roach? Yeah. Yes.
Well, my actor came up with that. He said, I can't remember. He said, I don't know if he called him that or said something about it. And I go, I should just, because Lloyd had a different name. And I said, I should just have Lloyd be Harry Scrotum. So then it became a running joke because Will, the reporter, after Lloyd runs away from the aliens, boy, I'm going to miss Harry Scrotum. And then my character watching it on TV goes, Harry Scrotum. What was his mama thinking about naming him? Those kind of jokes. And I'm not going to go too far with all the bathroom humor and bullshit like that. But for little fun things like that. And then, like I said, the quotes, there's the big diplomat from India. And he's talking about how India is going to come in with launch all their big planes. And they'll beat the United States at their own game, and India will come in and save the world. Well, the character, the Indian character, says, I will not be treated like a baby. Nobody puts baby in the corner. What? I won't be put in the corner and treated like a baby. Nobody puts baby in the corner. That's 30 dancing, and then Dean uses it in Supernatural. The guy tells Dean, he says, and you got to park your car. You can't keep driving around in that car. Everybody knows what that car is. And Dean says, nobody puts a baby in a corner. And Sam's like, that's from Dirty Dancing. Swayze always gets a pass. So you can make a game out of it. If you sit from the very beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, you will pick up all kinds of little Easter eggs like that. There's one where when I became my superhero persona of Parsons, one of the first places I end up to fight the aliens, and I stand there and I'm going, those aliens won't come around me. I've got to stop them. The line must be drawn here. And Jean-Luc Picard said that in Star Trek Insurrection against the Borg. So through the whole movie, you can make, it could be a board game because you could sit there and watch the movie and go, oh, that's from Planet Nine from Outer Space. That's from Supernatural. That's from Dirty Dancing. That's from Star Trek Insurrection. And it's all on purpose because that's the shit I like. My wife's going, oh, God, you're doing Picard? That's so stupid. I go, I know, but this is what I like. I don't care if nobody likes it. I like it. I have fun with it.
But, that's one of the things.
Don't get so hung up on if you're like, well, what if nobody likes it? Oh, fuck that. Are you having a good time making a movie? Then make the movie.
You're making a movie for yourself. And
yeah,
you know what? There's something to be said about that. Because, when it comes down to it, if you don't, you've got control, you make your own movie. You lose control if you go to a studio. And if you like this shit and you want to put it in the movie, Joel, by all friggin' means, put it in the movie. Because it's your movie, and that's a wonderful thing.
So, Mr. Joel, speaking of weird little personal Easter eggs, I have a weird question for you that stemmed from watching an interview of yours from a while back with a Mr. Sean Weathers,
where he
calls you the king of B-movies, but I have decided that you are absolutely, I'm going to say it for the third time today, you are the master of micro-budget.
It's funny to say that, right? Because I've heard other people, I've had other interviews where they go, you're the master of micro-budget movies, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. That's another one. Great. Put that up in
I have not heard that. I really prefer talking to you in person than listening to your interviews, but my partner did look up a bunch of your interviews this morning, and I promised him that I would ask you this very specific question. You specifically mentioned this was an interview about your love of comic books and superhero movies and things of that nature. And high fives on Batman, bro. I'm going to show you some pictures later. I have some amazing Batman paraphernalia.
Anyway, but ask him the question.
Yes, the question for you is, you mentioned that the Thor movie did not turn out like you wanted it to, and I was hoping that maybe you could tell us if you had directed the Thor movie, what would you have done differently?
Oh, my, the Thor movie?
Thor.
Yes. Thor,
well, I don't,
yes.
I don't know.
You mentioned that you did not, it did not turn out like you expected it to.
I said that?
Yes, yeah. You did.
And are we talking about Thor, the Marvel Comics Jerry, God of Thunder?
Yep, exactly, Thor.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure this is the first film.
I'm pretty sure it's the first film they're talking about because I saw the clip too.
I mean, if I actually have the interview pulled up, I can look at it real quick, but you specifically mentioned that you were not happy with the way the Thor movie turned out and that you had expected it to be different.
I'd have to know what context I said that because I don't know if I meant, you know, Dr. Darnold Blake wasn't in it, but I did like that they mentioned, look, there's a Dr. Donald Blake here. And a lot of people weren't catching that. And I go, yeah, Dr. Donald Blake is Thor. He banged the cane on the ground, and he was, and he became Thor, Dr. Donald Blake. But the rest of the movie, I'm pretty sure I really liked the movie. We went and seen it at the theater. In fact, we bought the ticket for the all-day Marvel movies. We saw Iron Man and Spider-Man and Avengers. But I'd have to know how exactly how I did say it, and then I would probably know. I know from what I grew up with was Dr. Donald Blake banged the cane on the ground, the aliens were attacking, he turned into Thor, he wiped out the aliens, and whenever Donald Blake would slam the, you know, then he was a doctor, and it was in the comics for years, but in the movie just decided, well, we're going to ignore it and say there's not Donald Blake, is not connected to Thor. But the rest of this movie, I think I liked everything about it, but, you know, I don't know.
I honestly, like, I have not had a chance to, like, write down quotes from the interview, but I've been watching it today just, you know, in preparation for talking to you again because I really do have, like, a secret girl crush on you. Sorry. Like I said, your wife is invited. So I didn't write down quotes from it, but you did mention that not that you were completely unhappy with the movie, but that they did it in a completely different way than you expected it would turn out. And so I was wondering if that is something you had thought about because I have a whole crap ton of superhero shit on my walls all the time.
Unless
I think about it a lot. Like, how would I have done this differently? Like, this comic book here, like, I get really upset with Usagi Yojimbo and how they try to portray him in things, but that's a completely different discussion. Yes.
Well, that's the only thing. And then I know when he went to Asgard, when one of the movies had him in Asgard so much, I was like, oh, enough of Asgard. I want to get back to Earth. I want to be back on Earth. I understand he's from Asgard, but let's see what he does on Earth. And that would upset me. But even those, then I saw them, and then I was like, okay, no, I can buy into this. This is cool. I'm enjoying that we're in Asgard and we're not on Earth. But, yeah, the only thing I think that I can remember was, you know, I kept waiting for, I was thinking it was going to be the Donald Blake origin, and it wasn't. And then I had to look at the movie again because I can't really remember. I remember in the one where they found Thor's hammer and Hawkeye was up in the roost and he was, and I even missed that in the movie. They go, is the Hawk up there? And they're like, yeah, I didn't even realize that was Hawkeye. So like seven more movies later, and I'm like, oh, it was Hawkeye they were talking about. I thought they meant some guy with Hawkeyes. They meant Hawkeye. And the hammer was down in the ground. The only thing I got whatever about it is because, and they get so caught up in copyrights and all that bullshit, like in Endgame was every Marvel superhero was in Endgame in the comic book. Just like in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah, they did a little bit of justice on the Flash TV episode, but if they really tried on Crisis because they had the, you know, they wanted to have Michael Keaton and Flash together on Crisis, that Batman, and then they got the guy that was in Batman from 89, but the bat sign was changed because they said that was a mistake. They put up Batwoman's bat signal or Batman Beyond instead of Batman Michael Keaton 1989. But in the comic books, Crisis on Infinite Earths, with every single DC character, that just there's no way to do that in a movie. I just don't think there'd be a way. There'd be too much money. But those are the things I look at the comic and I go, man, it's like Spider-Man when his webs came from his wrist. I was like, no, that's... But then I told myself, okay, maybe in an alternate universe, he doesn't wear a web shooter, so I can buy into it. So the stuff with Thor probably would have been the same way. Like, okay, there's not a Dr. Donald Blake. It's just Thor by himself. All right, I can buy into that. But... You know, I know, yeah. I enjoyed them all, cause and then, of course, Avengers was you know, fantastic when that came. And when Hulk and Thor had a thing and they're standing side by side, it's almost like Thor looking at the Hulk and going, hey, we did a good job, buddy. And then the Hulk just smashes him off to the side, you know. Well, those were great.
Okay, so one other question. Since you have a love of comic books, and this is just off the top of my head, if there was a character in either the Marvel Universe or DC Universe or even – one of the Valiant verse or whatever you want to say, that you would want to play, that you would want to be in and no. play that character. Is there one?
A long time ago,
hero.
You know, better
or
shape,
villain,
it would have been
so.
Nova or, of course, Spider-Man. Now it would be more like if you could don the Iron Man armor. That'd be cool. Or even a Batman character, since Batman wasn't completely, you know, physically fit. He relied a lot on, you know, his costumes and the mechanics of the costumes and stuff like that, especially Iron Man. But something like that, I mean, you know, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pretend that you said Batman because, again, the interview that I watched or part of, the interview that I watched earlier, you did talk about your love for Batman. I actually am a huge Batman fan. Yes, I will probably, if I ever have to like Skype podcast, do it in my bat mask. I love it that you are such a fun director. You do what you want to do, like no fucks given whatsoever. See the field in which I have sown my fucks and notice that it is barren. Like, that is
what?
Angel. And
sorry, you lost me there, Rachel.
The field in which you have sown your seeds of fucks to be given.
Oh,
it is
okay,
barren.
Now I got
you. Yeah.
So as we end up here and finish up, the first thing I want to do is please, Joel, let people know where they can buy the Craiglon Incident and that. I'll get to your page and post on ISF too and push it for you.
Send us both the link to where we can get your shit. And we will send it to every fucking person.
I got her link, King of the B-Movies, Joel B. Weinkopf interview. Now I'm kind of like, can you guys just wait while I watch this interview so I know what Rachel's talking about Thor? I don't want to make it look like I didn't say something. So I'm going to watch that later.
It's an hour and a half, for God's sake.
it's only 9 minutes. And with Sean. Sean was awesome to talk to, so I got to watch that and see what that Thor comment was. But the same thing I tell, you know, it's like Facebook to me was a great way for people, you know, to hook up and reconnect with people from the past. But then also if you want to, like for me, I mean, other people might be, hey, try this can of dog food. It's Alpo 47. It's really great. And then all the Alpo people will talk about the Alpo dog food, and that's great for them. For me, it's, hey, check out my latest movie. I get on Facebook. I try to put it on different, you know, places on Facebook, and then I just rely on people. Because you still have people go, there's one guy on Facebook, he goes, I'll put something up about it. I go, yeah, so come to me if you want to get the Craiglon Incident. He goes, where's the link? I go, dude, the link is me. Come to my page and click on private message and say, Joel, I want a copy of Craiglon Incident. What do I do? And I go, $20, here's my PayPal, you'll have it in 3 days. Order it. That's as simple as I can make it. So
that
I tell
is
people, yeah,
all we have to know about that shit. That is awesome.
Yeah, you go to Facebook, you look up Joel D. Weinkopf, and then you look up my page, and you'll see all the stuff I'm doing right now. Craiglon is top, and then you just say, oh, I wonder how I get that. You write me a little message. You say, hey, Joel, I want to get Craiglon in some. What do I do? And then I write you back and go, send me $20 PayPal. You'll have it in 4 days or 4 or 5 days, whatever it is, you know. And that's the easiest way. That's better than a link or anything else. Just ask the person that made the movie, and that's the easiest way.
Well, we don't always have that availability,
that's sort of
so
the same way.
I appreciate that.
Hold on, Rach. Hold on. That's sort of the same way that we do the podcast, too. We do it through ISF. We do it through our own page, and people know me and people know Rachel. And Facebook is really good in terms of networking. And that's how, of course, you know, we did a podcast together years ago. That's how we got to know each other. So it's a great tool.
Horror
it's
movies
really, really
from good. The 70s through the 2000s. That was so good.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Joel, I want to thank you very, very much for being on. You're always welcome back. You know, and one other thing before you go, you know, we're talking specifically about the Craiglon Incident, but you have a lot of other movies that for sale too. So you want to mention those also?
Yeah, that's the same thing. If somebody. Because a lot of people, again, it goes back to Facebook, they'll write me, hey, you want a friend of Chris, and I'll say, how did you hear of me? And they'll go, oh, man, I saw you in Dirty Cop, No Donut. And one guy just wrote me, and he goes, I saw you in Creep. I didn't think you'd even talk to me. And I'm like, dude, I'm just a struggling actor. I'm nobody. I'm just like a guy that used to drive a truck for 20
years.
Director, producer, writer, you do it all.
You are not a struggling actor, yo. You got all the cred.
I don't have the money that Tom Cruise has, put it that way. So I'm a struggling actor.
I didn't say you were a rich, struggling
actor,
director, writer, producer, and creator. I just said that you were all of those things, not just an actor.
and you have to do that because a lot of times, a lot of actors just go to their agent and go, get me jobs. Well, even though my agent was getting new jobs, they're not every single day. So you're like, okay, if I'm going to do something, I got to start creating my own universe here. So I'll start taking acting jobs from other people, and then you got your agent getting you stuff, and you got other people you're doing stuff for. But that's still not enough. Then you got to say, okay, let me start producing my own stuff. Oh, now, who am I going to get to edit this? Oh, shit, I better learn how to edit. So you go buy an editing program, and I sit here, and I teach myself how to edit. So then you do all aspects, and the last one it is trying to distribute the movie. So you can either just be an actor that's going through your agent and go, hey, did you guys give me any work yet? I'm not doing it. I'm just sitting around the household waiting for your phone calls. No, get out and make your own movie. Make your own history start to happen by doing movies. And one guy asked me in Minnesota, I had my shirt on, it says, give the part to Wine Coop. And he goes, well, I've got a shirt with my picture on it, too. And I go, oh, that's cool, you should wear it. Oh, I would never wear it. That's too whatever of myself to wear my, I go, why? I go, does your agent promote you? Well, no. I go, neither does mine. That's why I make T-shirts, so I can sell T-shirts, so I can get my name out there so people see it. That's why I sell my own movies. I've done, at the time, 52 movies. How many have you done? Well, I've done three. I go, well, you need to promote, man. Does your agent promote you? No. I said, then you got to do it yourself. You should be making your T-shirts, and you should be making wristbands and comic books, and you should make movies and videos. You need to get your name out there as much as you possibly can so people know who you are, because if you never do anything, nobody will ever know who you are ever, ever, ever. I don't care what, if you're a fisherman. It doesn't matter. If you don't get out there and go, hey, I'm John Smith, I fish, I got this walleye, and I got this bass, and I got some carpenters, and you're saying all these fish. If you didn't say nothing, guess what? No one's ever going to know you. But you got to promote yourself. And yeah, then a lot of people go like, oh, you're spooning shit yourself, you're talking about yourself. That's promotion, man. You think Tom Cruise got it by just laying around his house going, I hope I turn into a big actor someday. No, he hustled his ass off because he became what he was, what he is.
Yeah, and just to give everyone an idea, I'm looking at your IMDb page right now. As an actor, you have 178 credits, and God knows how many you're in filming right now, at least 10, at least on the IMDb page. So, you know, that's what you do.
And by the way, on the topic of holy crap, Joel, you have done so much shit. Like, seriously, I looked it up, too. I thought it was 179, but it might be 178 credits. You as an actor, that's not your director credits. Like, you are stupid amazing, and you are totally right to promote yourself. Everybody has that right. But
absolutely.
I am going to take just a second, really quick, to... tangent thought on your love of superheroes and my needing to promote something. So here in my very relatively smallish city of North Little Rock, we have an actual, honest to God, masked superhero. His name is Shadow Vision. And he does patrol the streets of North Little Rock and Rose City.
See, if I was single and I had some money to throw around, because there's these guys that they, you know, just like you talking about your guy, there's a lot of guys. There's that Phoenix guy, and he ended up in jail one time because he's trying to defend somebody, and he beat the crap out of him, and the cops came and arrested him and went and put him in jail. So the superhero's sitting in jail. But there's a couple other guys, I forget where they're from, but they had a garage inside the city, and they had a car, and it went down in this garage area where they hid it, and they had it all set up kind of like the Batcave, and they actually went out and fought crime in the city and stuff. So... yeah, you're taking a chance. Better be. It's not like just like the comics, but if you look at the dark stuff for Batman, Batman would go out in Batman Beyond, when Bruce Wayne was still going out fighting. The reason he hung up the cape and everything is because he had a heart attack and he had to pull a gun and start shooting people. And that's when he said, I'm going to hang it all up. And Terry kind of, you know, found the Batcave and took him, became Batman Beyond, because Batman, you know, got too old and couldn't do it. But In the stuff that's going on today, yeah, you kind of feel like, you know, I want to go out and kick the shit out of that guy because he's a bad guy. But unfortunately, the cops come and say, hey, thanks a lot, superhero. They're like, hey, I'm asking the superhero, okay, we're going to shoot your ass.
Thank you, friend.
Yep.
Sorry, guys. So what I was going to say is the really cool thing is I have managed to get into contact with Shadow Vision, who is part of a network of apparent masked superheroes that are, I'm not assuming they have powers or anything, but they go around and patrol in areas out here, and there's a whole network of these people, and Shadow Vision has agreed to a very special interview with me face-to-face on Saturday at 12 o'clock Central Standard Time.
And we'll be recording that.
Yes, we are hoping that it can be a live recording, but if we can't work out the logistics there, it will be recorded and posted as soon as I am done with it. But yes, I am going to be interviewing Arkansas's local masked
superhero,
I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm. And crime fighter.
That's cool.
And again, just very quickly, we have a lot of things going on at Deviant Legion. So on Friday, Adam has a show on Cathode Ray Mission, and that's going to be about the Singing Detective. Then next Tuesday, we're going to have Arnie Leibovitz, and we'll be talking about George Powell. Arnie is the director of the Puppetoon movie, and that's up for Rondo this year. So we'll be having them. Also, we announced this, but a very close friend of ours of the podcast, Derek Ferguson, passed away. And Derek was an author for Black Pulp. He did the Dylan series. He did a lot of things. He was on podcast a number of times. I'll be going to the funeral on Thursday. But next week we'll be doing a memorial to him, or maybe the week after. We still have to schedule that up. We also have a show on the 22nd, Thursday, a week from Thursday, and that is going to be a retrospective on Richard Rush, the director of The Stuntman and several other films. And our special guest for that particular podcast is Gary Warner Kent. And Gary Warner Kent was a stuntman on The Stuntman and six other Richard Rush films. And also joining me for that show will be film reviewer par excellence, Noel Vera. So that's what we've got going on so far with Deviant Legion. Again, Joel, I want to say thank you so much. And whenever you've got something going on, just let me know, and we'll have you on, and we'll help you promote it, because you're an absolutely wonderful guest.
Well,
you really are.
My next thing
we
is
we love your face.
Oh, hold on, Rach. Let him talk. Go ahead, Joel.
Oh, I was just saying my next movie is actually, I'm doing it now. That's the Craigline Incident 2 Aftermath. So that's the one I'll be releasing next month.
Nice.
Wow. Well, we'll get you on in probably around June, something like that, to talk about that and some other things. We'll come up with a subject that we can all talk about. But we'll get you on in June so we can promote that. Again, I want to thank you very, very much, Joel. Do you got anything to end up just – again, say where you can buy the movie or that sort of thing.
Just like I said, you want to search me out on Facebook. My name is Joel D. Weinkoop, and just Joel D. Weinkoop. I've got the actor Joel D. Weinkoop, and I got all my movie pages, but just go to Joel D. Weinkoop. That's the one I look at the most. First thing you're going to see is the Craigline Incident, and if you want to get a copy of it, just hit me up on Facebook. Say, hey, Joel, I want to get a copy of your movie. What do I do? And then I'll tell you, and then we'll make it happen, and you'll have the movie in 4 days. So
I will also specify that it's Joel, J-O-E-L, D, Weinkoop, W-Y-N-K-O-O-P.
Wynkoop. Right, yes. And the middle initial is E for David.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then
okay.
So all my other movies. I have 95 of my movies here with me, where the ones I take to all my conventions, because a lot of people say, like, well, I just bought Creep from so-and-so or so-and-so. Well, you can get it from me, too, if you want it. Just write me, and I'll get it to you. I've got my movies. So I buy my movies from my distributors. I'll go to Ron, and I'll go, Ron, I want to buy 30 copies of Creep. Ron, I want to buy 30 copies of Witchy Games. Ron, I want to buy 30 copies of Screaming for Sanity. Wild Owl, call Rob. I need 35 copies of Demon. I need 50 copies of Like Animator. So I buy them so I can resell them, and I think a lot of people just say, well, that's just Joel Wynkoop, an actor. He doesn't have his movies. We got to go to the distributor. No, you don't. Just come to me.
There you go. There you go. And trust me, just check his IMDb, and you'll find so much to look at and be just enamored of all the wonderful titles out there. Okay? Joel, again, thank you very much. And Rachel, thank you so much. For everything you
do. Rachel, thank you.
And, love you both. I hope you have a great rest of your night. I'm going to go take some more cough medicine and pass the fuck out. Good.
She's not been feeling well today, so.
I'm going to watch this interview and see what I say about Thor, and then I'm going to write to you on Facebook, and I'm going to go, you're right, I said I didn't like Thor because his hair wasn't long enough, or whatever the reason was.
All right. Fair enough. Well, listen, thank you very much for listening. And we'll talk to you folks soon. And
thank you very much.
Joel, again, my real appreciation, man. All right. Good night, people.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.